Welcome to OpenHive.js, our podcast on all things JavaScript with Nearform guests. I'm James Snell, and I'm joined today by my colleague Matteo Colina and our guest Yoni Goldberg to discuss integration tests with JavaScript. Hello, Yoni.
Hey, so happy to be here.
Thanks for joining us. So I wanted to start by introducing yourself.
Sure. I'm an independent backend consultant almost for 20 years. And the recent years, I'm focused on Node.js. The fun part about being a freelancer and consultant is that you have the chance to see like many different teams and technologies and use cases every year, which is great for learning. And then I can do what I really, really enjoy even more than coding. Sorry about that. And it's blogging and recording videos. And I really like writing. I wrote some JavaScript and Node.js guide, like Node.js best practices and similar guides. And among all the topics and things that I'm mostly in love with, architecture and testing, and today is about testing.
Wow, testing. You know, one of my favorite subjects. I really wanted to spend some time talking about testing on OpenHive. It's one of the few topics that always bring a spark a very, very strong debate amongst the developers, right?
Yeah, it's one of those, you know, it's one of the things that it's super important, but always ends up getting kind of, you know, done as an afterthought. You folks don't put as much thought and effort into designing their test architecture, which is ironic given how important it is to actually get past that into production.
Yeah, absolutely agree. I think that half of my work, maybe half of my work, was dedicated to teams calling me after the fact, once they are already coding for a year or so, and then they feel how much they lag this testing, and then it's much harder.
Well, you know, I was chatting recently with a few. We are consultants ourselves. We do chat, work, and chat a lot with loads of different teams throughout the globe. So it's often very interesting to see the breakdown between people that says, well, if we develop right tests, not even talking about how we write tests, which is a kind of total kind of form, and we'll soon get into it because I have my opinion and you have your opinion and James has his opinion and we all disagree very likely. But I think one thing that we could agree on is the fact that automated testing is an absolute requirement for reliable and modern software development. And it still, to me, it comes to my, it passed through my head all the time that there are companies out there that do not do any sort of form of automated testing because they think it's too hard. It slows them down too much, or, you know, all sort of bad things related to testing. And they think it's useless, essentially.
It does remind me of an old story. I had one client, I mean, this was many, many years ago. They would call me in the morning, say, hey, we need this feature and this feature, and please push it to production by this afternoon. There was no testing. The production environment was the test. That was fun. Did that for 6 months total. Every day, new things coming. That was crazy insane. So, why don't we, start? You know, like Matteo said, everybody has a different opinion on this. Why don't we start with kind of, laying out what is your basic philosophy for integration tests?
My philosophy for integration tests. And we worked really hard in the last year, me and a few colleagues on a repo that we are releasing this day, is that component tests are now your default type of testing. Now, we should first define properly what are component tests. It's kind of integration test, but integration test just means so many different things. And component test has a finer definition. It means that if you have a component, microservice, or just any kind of autonomous component, your test scope is the entire component with all the layers. It basically has three main rules. One is your test enters through the door of the component, like the user, through the API, the REST, the graph, the message queue, like the user. And then second rule, it spans all the layers. of this component, the data access, the logic, the API, the middlewares, the error handling, the database itself, anything that you deploy or highly customize is part of the test. And but one exception, if it's going outside to a collaborator service, cloud service, other microservice, no, we want to focus on what we deploy. So we stub or fake these calls. In other words, what I'm putting in production tomorrow, this is the scope of my test, not a function, not the entire world, my deployment unit. Which brings me to the most important point about component test, rule number 3. It's meant to be not like a big test that you run in CI or end-to-end test. No, it's a companion of your coding. You have to run, it can be so fast and convenient that you can run it all the time during coding, and it helps you as you code to focus only on progression. Don't think about the past, on breaking stuff, what you're doing now. So in different words, it's kind of a big unit test in the sense that you have all the perks of unit test. It's almost as fast as unit test, and I'll discuss about benchmarks that we have conducted soon. It's almost as convenient. It lives in the same process, so you can have everything, test double, smoking, coverage, environment variables, everything like unit test, but much more coverage and realistic scenario. And indeed, it's not only my philosophy. You see in the testing industry a growing consensus that integration tests are now, in this age of distributed components, you have the testing diamond now, the testing honeycomb, can't see dots as the great testing trophy. All of them share commonality. Integration test is the fat part there in the middle. But there is one big caveat here, and that unlike unit test, when you start with component test, upfront you have very big decisions to make. And it's very easy to make the wrong decision there, right? You have to set up the database, the message queue, the web server, and big decisions. I mean, how do I clean my testing data? Do I use a fake message queue or the real one? How do I spin up a database? And if you are making a wrong decision there, then it's very easy to kill it. And so many people believe in this approach. So it's funny enough, they go to knowledge sources like Amazon or Udemy. And it's funny because if you search there for integration for unit tests, then you'll get 50 books only about unit tests. But integration test, which seems to be one of the biggest trends in testing, if you search for it, you'll get very few results where almost none of them is about backend integration test. And for this reason, we are now releasing a repo that is called Node.js Integration Test Best Practices, with many examples and 40 best practices on how we believe that it should be done right. This is more or less my philosophy. What's yours? I'm curious.
My philosophy, it's so I take your same concept of the team boundary. So for me, everything that I define the unit as my deployment unit. So it's everything that it's is part of my unit, is part of the team, is covered by, I call them unit tests, and these includes the database. So that is my first rule. And then I take the integration tests for what is outside of the team boundary. And so it's typically more end-to-end like, and they are very slow, and they don't run very often. Typically spans multiple teams, span bigger organizations. Those are the main two areas. And then there is the use of mocks. So everything that's part of my unit test suite should not be mocked on the happy path. I call this is a very important point, the happy path for me. So you should test the, I typically recommend testing the happy path from top to bottom, A to that. And then use mocks and other techniques to test what is missing there in those, what is not covered. And I typically aim, depending on the team level and expertise, 100% code coverage might be needed. So a team of more expert developers can probably get away with less than 100%, but I tend to, if you're onboarding junior devs and so on, it's probably simpler to have 100% or junior or mid-level devs, it's probably simpler to enforce 100% code coverage rule, and that will give the people the best results.
I definitely got to agree with that. The one thing that I've seen kind of, you know, messed up the most really comes down to the mocks, right? You know, people tend to over rely on them. And they'll design the mocks around the code they wrote rather than, you know, what it needs to do, right? And so they end up testing just, you know, it ends up being just a tautology, right? They're testing what their code does rather than what it needs to do. And because the mock is there and they're relying on it too much, they're not actually seeing where the actual failures are, right? So it's, you know, an artificial happy path, right?
Yeah, I think that a good rule to follow is that whenever possible, try to test exactly like your production. What's going on in production? Same code, same environment. If it's possible, this should yield you the best confidence. And only if there are reasons to deviate from this, and there are sometimes some things that are harder to reproduce or are very slow, only then choose mock as a necessary evil. Uncle Bob has a nice saying. He said, prefer mocks across architectural boundaries, prefer pure function within those boundaries. In other words, we should differentiate mocks that are meant to isolate ourselves from the world. That's perfectly fine. We need to isolate ourselves from other codes that are of other people. But mocking our own code, not testing things that we deploy to production, is a totally different thing that we should at least try to avoid when possible.
Well, yeah, I mocks, more mocks. This is one of the things that I was like, I was once in a team where everything was mocked. And it was just like, what are you testing? Oh, I'm testing that I'm calling this function and it returns this value, but that value is mocked.
Yeah.
So you're testing that the mock you set up respond correctly. Yes.
Yeah.
How much time did it take you to write this? Oh, 2 hours.
Yeah, I've encountered entire test weeks that were nothing but testing mocks. One, it was two teams working on it, and neither team realized that the other team had mocked the data. So one team had created their own mock to test the other team's service, which was a mock. So it was a mock testing a mock. So, you know, it's all kinds of issues. So, yeah. As you pointed out, there's very little information out there about the integration tests. And, you know, and one of the things we'll make sure we do is throw a link to that repo that you're putting together into the show notes so everybody can have it. In terms of what is an integration test versus what is a component test, right? I mean, these are both things that are pretty, there's not a lot of information out there about what these are. How would you define a component test and how would you differentiate it from integration?
Well, like everything in testing has three different definitions, unlike end-to-end, which has 100 definitions. But basically, component test is a kind of integration test. So integration test, if you look out in the wild, there's three main definitions that you see people use. One of them is multiple components being tested together, kind of a big bang approach. On the other end of the spectrum, we have a narrow integration test. I test two layers together. I'm testing my data access layer and my database, or my middleware with my, a logic layer. This is narrow integration test. There in the middle, there is component test. I'm testing my entire component deployment unit, but that's it. Not everything beside it. And this is my preferred approach because it's small enough, but in the same times, it's exactly what you deploy. So should maximize your confidence.
I've seen a few teams struggle with especially with the separate APIs on API versioning and changes to cross team boundaries and APIs. So essentially a team pushing changes out and not having any sort of shared governance on how to detect those changes, because essentially on one end they were essentially testing against a mock. And on the other end, they were like testing their own APIs. So there was very little cross service, cross component, or cross, you want to call it that way, cross unit testing. So what are your strategy for this?
Oh yeah, this is a one of the downside of component tests, because anytime you isolate yourself from the world, you don't know really know if you work correctly with the world. Yeah, so in our repo, we have a section about integration tests. And I think that you should take it, you should approach from, you should apply different techniques. Start with the most simple one and apply the most expensive one based on your needs, based on the cost of mistake. So just to give one example, if the cost of, if it's a simple integration and there, nothing too bad can happen due to a mistake, try to focus your test only on your component, because it's much easier. So for example, you can test using libraries like Knock that you're issuing the right HTTP request. And if your schema, your outgoing schema is wrong, you can discover this failure in a second SU code. And you don't need anyone else for this. It's very fast, and it's one type of integration test, one easy one. Take one level up, maybe you are not being able to respond to timeouts and to retry and have a circuit breaker. You can also simulate this with Knock. Simulate this, test it locally. One other level of errors is maybe your component is not conformed to your documentation. So say your API is not returning what is documented in the open API. Yeah. So, and if you're using frameworks like Fastify, for example, they are heavy reliant there on JSON schema. It's very easy to pre-produce open API or Swagger. Then in all the test runners, you can use one line in your test, discover that you are not conforming to your open API and get the failing test without messing with other components. So you can cover a lot of the integration risks by focusing on your component in component test. But at some point, this is true to some extent. There are type of issues that cannot be covered with this technique, with open API. For example, your client believes that in the string field there should be a phone number. And you saw that it should be, I don't know, something similar, different formatting. In this case, you need to, if it's worth your time and money, you need to scale up and use more formal contract tests, which we also cover in the repo. But this demands now collaboration with a different team and more tooling. The price is higher. Maybe it's worth it. My main philosophy, try to do it. I mean, there are a lot of contract tests that not demand all of these bells and whistles. Use it sparingly, only if you need it.
Yeah. I mean, that contract testing is key. One of the other ways that I've seen this addressed pretty well at one of our clients was that the team that owned the service that was being mocked, so the remote service that was being accessed, they were also responsible for creating the mock in distributing it out. So rather than the team that was relying on it, right, creating the mock and making some assumptions, right, they had to get that from the other team. And the other team was responsible for keeping it up to date with what was in the live service. It worked really well. But as you said, it is more expensive. It is, it requires a lot more work to do that.
Yeah, that sounds like kind of a middle approach. So you get an API client from your collaborator, and this API client might also have type definition, and you get a guard, guard at least against typing and stuff like this without involving, use NPM, just get the library and you get a nice guard. Yeah, it sounds like a great happy medium between the expensive contract test and just assuming yourself. I like it.
So the whole setup of this thing, right? We've mentioned it a few times. It can be pretty complicated. And one of the challenges that I've had a lot of customers talk about, I'm sure Mateo's experienced this before, is the local setup, right? So I want to do these integration tests. I need to be able to run these, locally, smaller environments. People are doing Docker Compose environments, to try to get all these things set up. What is your approach for doing that local dev of these integration tests when there's so many other components that have to be pulled in?
Yeah, the setup is indeed one of the caveats of this technique, because you have database and you have stuff that are harder. But the good news is that you should do it only once. So once you have proper setup, you can just replicate it to all the other components. And I think that the first principle guiding the Northern Light to follow is that you should set up to be a coding companion. Okay? It's not many people set up integration tests like end-to-end. Yeah, it's run. It takes 1 minute or 2 minutes. Oh, no. I mean, I think it should be something that you want encourage developer to run even in watch mode or every minute, not once a day. So you have to spend some time on optimizing the performance of the testing, and it can get really, really fast. Like we are able to run 100 tests in 4 seconds with database. And unit tests, just to compare, a bit less than 1 second. So the difference is 1 second to four, it's almost neglectable. How it should be done is, first it should be clear, I think that Docker Compose is the infrastructure technology, because it's the kind of the only technology that you can, with the same setup, running locally, but also in almost every CI. And then you should do a kind of Matteo Collina work of optimizing the entire setup and thinking about performance. And if you're able if you can afford hiring Matteo, it's probably the best approach. But if not, there are a lot of sensible setups that you can do that can greatly boost the performance. For example, in your testing hook, you start Docker Compose. Don't do it all the time. If you are now on developer machine and the ports are already in listen mode, it's already up. Don't do it. So the database is up, do nothing. We are able, when doing this, I have the test running in 3 milliseconds because the infrastructure is already up. Another optimization, you can in your Docker Compose, set up the database for less durability. Every database have these flags where you can set, use in memory database, don't use logging too much. Then it's additional 10% of performance increase. Other examples by the way, in Fastify, there is a very nice option where you can even bypass the networking layer. You have a Light My Request library. So if you have the API, you can invoke the function behind it right away without even going through the networking layer. So with a lot of optimizations, it can be as fast as once you code, the test runs in few milliseconds, they last few seconds. And all of this is 20-25 lines of code. Basically, the main part is spend some time on the configuration, or you can get inspiration from our repo. It can be almost as fast as unit. And
once you get it running, keep it running. It's just constantly there, always available, like the unit test. The Matteo Collina method, of just trying to make things faster. I like that. That's good stuff.
Well, it's just one of those things that you have to do, like that networking library, the inject method was a great idea from Happy, and which we copied very with attribution, essentially. Like we were very happy to recognize the key idea there. In fact, we even forked the module because of some different design choices that we wanted to take, but we decided that we could not rely on the original one, but we forked it. That's the beauty of open source as well. Okay, if you don't agree with something of the design decision of that. But the generic approach and the generic API, it's phenomenal because you don't need to create a port. Now, this seems a very silly thing, okay? But if you consider, let's imagine that you have, you want to run, you have a suite of tests, and your suite of tests have, you need to run, each one of them needs to allocate a new port for the service. This is, it starts to become really expensive, but it's not just one, because you're also connecting to it. So it's actually two. So you're opening two sockets and it's a lot of milliseconds that pass in the vent loop that you're not, like, you're losing just by doing all this work. So I'm all in for this kind of technique. And the nicest part about that approach, that inject, that is way better than, for example, a library called Supertest in the or SuperAgent, Supertest in the Express world, is that with Supertest, it will actually allocate the port and do the listening behind your back. With Fastify and Inject, there is no port being open, so the test can be like super fast. And it's a critical mechanism that that I recommend using all the time. The system, it's also so fast that you can even use it in production. If you want to call your own endpoint for some reason, the actual system is actually as fast, it's extremely fast even for an in production function call. So it's just great. And yeah, we have optimized a few bits and bobs there, like limit, did a little bit of changes and so on. But it's like, from my point of view, it's one of the best things that we can have in the Fastify world.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that people just don't understand how fast they can be. And you mentioned ports. So one of the traps that I see people fall in while doing the setup is the port thing. What's happening is that they start a web server. Most of them has a specific port being used, but then the test runner is a multi-process one. So it spins a multi-web server, and then there is a port collision. Then what some of them are doing, so they say, okay, so I will just spin up one web server in one process, and the test is going to be in a different process. Now, not only you are slowing your test down, because now it's a process-to-process communication, you're losing a lot of testing perks. Like now you can do mocking and test doubles and change configuration files and coverage, because it's process to process. It's not anymore big unit test. It's a different thing. So yeah, I mean, one way to solve this is how Matteo suggested. Use a library like Fastify had that bypass the network layer, because HTTP works. I mean, you don't have to test this layer. It's probably okay. One other option is to just only in testing, specify no port. All the frameworks will randomize. I think by the way, it's the Node.js HTTP server. If it doesn't get a port, it will randomize one for you. So if you have six web servers, they will get random port and all cool. Just do nothing.
We're talking about, you know, take out the network layer, you know, bypass this and you know, or mock that. That it's great, but how do you deal with the fail cases that do come up? Right, you know, how do you deal with the expected and unexpected error cases like the network does introduce? Right, how do you make sure that as you're going through your integration tests that you're actually covering those? Because, you know, yes, the HP stack, it works, but there's always errors that can occur naturally as part of that network stack. How do you make sure that those are addressed?
You mean errors in the network, on the network between your test and the component and the API?
Yeah. How do you make sure that, you know, your application that you're running this integration test on, right, you know, is responding correctly to the fail cases that are introduced by the things that you're mocking out?
One of the big advantages of component test versus isolated test, unit test, is that you're being able to test all the, I would call it ops kind of stuff, error handling, metrics, stuff like this. So for example, I can test that if I'm using a Fastify plugin or Express middleware, and this one is calling the database, and then there is an async error in the database layer, that my error handling is catching the error and firing a metric to the monitoring. It's easy. I mean, I can just simulate one line using some kind of test double library. Hey, database, throw an error. I'm making a request to the API. And then I can spy on the monitoring metric method. Now, this perk is related only to component tests. In unit tests, you cannot do this type of, it's kind of checking that all the different corners of the components are interacting together directly. So basically no limits to what you can test here.
You just got to make sure that you actually are testing them, right? Yeah, right. You know, it's what I've seen in a lot of cases, you know, folks, you know, write the test based on what they expect, the happy path, right? And then they completely forget all of the failure cases, you know, or don't think about them, and so they end up not being covered.
It's one of those things that always puzzle me, the test on the error on the header paths, and it's so much fun to some extent, because you see I have like a lot of, especially on large organizations, there is, unless there is something, some very smart architect that is taking care of this, and then some very smart management that actually allocate budget to actually do those activities. There is nobody thinking about systemic failures. So, like, imagine that the typical case is that you have a butterfly effect, so a small glitch somewhere trigger a cascading failure through all the systems. And this is tragical, but it can be really, really bad for companies, because essentially something that, you know, should not be that problematic, it becomes a critical infrastructure piece for whatever reason. And then you are in a really bad situation. So one of the things that I love the most is the circuit breaker. We mentioned this before, Yanni, is the circuit breaker concept. I like this a lot. Like, for me, this is, you know, in most cases, we should be using circuit breaking techniques when talking with external services, so that we know when we, if they fail, we can handle the failure in a graceful manner, to some extent. Mm-hmm. There's a fantastic library for Node called Opossum. It's a god saver. I call it one of the god saver libraries. It's tiny. It works really well. It also have. I was recently working with a client in adding it with adding the Prometheus integration, so that we can publish the state of the circuit breaking of the circuit breaker on Prometheus, so that, you know, it can be mapped and visualized and so on.
Beautiful. And we have an example in a repo exactly for this. It's so easy with Knock. With Knock, you can define in a test in one line that on the first approach to the microservice, fail, but on the second one, do succeed. And then you just call your API. It's about to do some outgoing request, which is going to fail. And if your circuit breaker won't kick in and fix this, the test will fail. 5 lines of code of test. And it's so realistic and so focused on the chaotic conditions that we have in production. And I think we should generalize this. It's very easy to write happy pass fluff test in integration test. All this, you know, I'm calling my API, I'm getting the right response. Well, I mean, it's nice, you cover all the layers, but the value is not great. But it also can be much, much better if you lean toward this approach. Test your circuit breaker, your error handler, your metric, your monitoring, your Prometheus library. Test this new state of your component after the action. So many things that you can, so many more risks that you can tackle and quite easily that I think this is the holy grail of this technique.
And one of the approaches that I unfortunately have not seen enough of is application of fuzz testing to integration tests and component tests. You see fuzz testing a lot at, you know, at very narrow unit test level, right? Just throw a bunch of random random input, right, in a unit test. Not seeing it necessarily in an integration level. Let's throw a whole bunch of random behavior at that component and see how it responds.
Definitely something I'd like to see more of, and a lot more research and stuff going into to see if we can make it easier.
Yeah, just one sentence on it. I mean, it's beyond the integration test. There are a lot of great JavaScript libraries for doing property-based testing, which is a subset of fuzz testing. It's amazing technique, and very few are using it, and I really don't know why. I mean,
I have to think it's more, you know, part of it is it is complex to kind of get your head around, what it is. And there's just not a lot of information about out there about it. So I think, hopefully we can start to, get some more awareness of the technique and getting it out there.
Probably.
So dealing with data in tests, right? I mean, this is always something, you've mentioned a couple of times, getting the database set up is fine, right? Should these tests always start with a clean slate of data, or should you always wipe this thing out? How do you handle data in your integration?
Yeah, I think that among all the component test topics, this one is the most flammable one. I mean, I had so many passionate discussions with colleagues about one very major decision, and it's how do you clean the data? Because it also affects how you write the test. So basically there are three options. One of them is transactions. You pass transaction to your component and then roll back. I don't think that this one is a good approach. I won't delve into it, but there are other two good other techniques that it's hard to choose from. One of them is clean up after every test. Just put in your after each or before each, clean up all the tables, which is great because it's very deterministic. And you know that your database is always empty. If you have unique columns, no worries. I mean, the next time the test run, there's nothing there. You can put the same value. Some may be concerned because it won't work in a multi-process mode, right? If you have two processes, one of them is now adding data. The second process is now deleting it, collision. And also it should be a bit slower because you clean up after every test. So we did a benchmark and checked what is the performance penalty here of running in a single process and cleaning up after every test. And surprisingly, at least for me, there's almost no. I mean, even more, running in a single process is usually faster than multi-process test runner because the time to spin up a process is, unless you run 150 integration tests, it is likely to be slower. So it was half a second more. But I have other concerns.
So one of the things that I did, it's make sure that in your unit test, you always reuse the database connections. This is one of the hardest bits that a lot of companies don't, and a lot of teams don't get right. Those are expensive. Then, for example, in libraries like Mongo or even like database like Postgres, the create table or create collection commands are expensive. But cleaning those up, like cleaning all the records, is actually very fast. So you can actually develop your harness so that you actually delete only the data and not all the other structure within the system. And that becomes super fast to run, like MSM, hundreds of unit tests in per second or something like that. The other bit, but I disagree with Yoni on one thing, on the monoprocess versus multiprocess. I typically recommend multiprocess because it provides less flaky tests over time. Because a lot of people are generically rely on the use of globals for whatever reason. And this is another topic that we need to talk about in a second. So. And you're laughing because you have seen as much as bad code that we have seen probably, Yoni. But there is a lot of people in the JavaScript community that think that, the Node community that think that, we should use a huge amount of globals for whatever reason. And and that is usually the source of a lot of flakiness between tests. So by resetting the state, either you're using a library, like you're using an approach like the one that we have written in Fastify, where you can actually close and everything gets closed. So, all the libraries, like you manage the full life cycle of your server correctly. Otherwise, you will leak some data between runs. And if that happens, you get badly screwed.
Yeah, I actually agree. I mean, I run my test in a multi-process. Once we evaluated this clean after each technique, performance was not an issue. And I agree, there are other issues. Now, and I'm coming to that. There were other things that I didn't like in this approach, in testing, in cleaning after each test. One of them is troubleshooting. My test failed. I'm going to the database. There's nothing there. I want to evaluate my data. So Gil Tayar, my good friend, corrected me and say, hey, no, I'm cleaning it in before all. So after this, after the last test, I still have my data in. Well, yeah, it's better. But if you have multiple tests failing, then you want to see that maybe there is some relation between the tests. You want to see all the data you want. But my other concern with this is that it's you kind of assuming the database state when you're testing. You always get this very clean slate. It's clean for you. You know that the tables are empty. It's not like production where you have multiple records and multiple data scenarios and bam, something broke. And this is why I prefer the third option, which is I think that I'm going to surprise you. And I'm going to also say that the second option, this one is valid for me. I think it's valid. It's not an anti-pattern, but I prefer the third one. Don't clean up. Clean up occasionally, yeah. Once a day, once a week. You have to do, there is one caveat. Whenever you add a new record, if there are unique columns, you have to add a timestamp. Half a line of code. I mean, we can pay the price. The merit, it's faster. You are able to do troubleshooting. You get a nasty database, a messy database, and you are being to catch more stuff. And so yeah, this is my preferred approach. Yeah. But
I would, I just gotta say.
Yeah, so this goes back to one of my favorite examples from career. You know, and I'm not gonna name names to protect the innocent on there. I was working on one project. And it had been in production for a while, right? And you know, the database was massive. Another team said, "Hey, we're going to turn what you have. We're going to turn it into a product. We're going to work on it for a while, and then we're going to send it back to you a new version, right?" And as part of going back and doing the work, they decided to create a new landing dashboard page for this product. And the dashboard page was supposed to just show summaries, like a table with the most recent 100 items in the database, and the summary was like a name, 100 character snippet of text and a timestamp and a link to more data. Very, very simple. They went off, they created it, they tested it, they sent it back to me, and I plugged it into the actual data. Right. And it took, I am not kidding, it took 10 minutes to render this page with these 100 snippets, because they never tested it on a realistic database. Right. And to render this one page ended up generating over 100,000 SQL queries to render one page. I won't go into the details why it's a mess, but they never tested it on actual realistic data. In their tests, and they had 100% coverage of this particular part. In their tests, they would throw two or three records in, test to see if it worked, mm-hmm. right? And then they would clean the database right back up, right? And if only they had not cleaned up, right? If they just kept the data in there and kept it going, they would have seen the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So yeah. In this case, the methodology of cleaning up after themselves, right, and mocking the data actually caused a bug. Right, or cause a bug to be completely met.
The only hard part is the problem with unique fields. So that is, it requires a very hard discipline in testing, in writing tests that a lot of people don't have.
Yeah, but Matteo, there won't be any flakiness, rather immediate failure. In other words, if your column is not unique, the second time you run the test, it will fail. So you have to fix it right away.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. So it's just that a lot of people would not know how to even do that. Like it's, this is one of those things that make me completely puzzled. Yeah. Because you need to use a technique that is usually called the mirror testing, so that you put in certain inputs and you expect the test to reflect those input back to you. So a lot of, let's imagine we want to create a new to-do list. So a test that clean up the database would need to write the to-do, would write the to-do list entry as a fixed string, and it clean up the database every single time. The type of testing you are recommending, instead of doing that, creates a random list.
Yes.
And create a random item list and then matches it in the end. So you need to store it and so on. So it's actually, you know, you need to know about this technique. Otherwise, you will not use it in this way. It's one of my favorite testing techniques, by the way. But it requires it requires discipline, as I said.
I agree. There is no clear winner here, I think, between the two options. I agree. I mean, there it's a nice trade-off. And about what you said, James, yeah, it's amazing. It's always developer likes to have artificial and very clean conditions in testing. So everything works. It's very few records. So everything works, but then you meet the production. So I call it production-oriented testing. You, whenever possible, and it's easy, you want to simulate as much of the chaos of production. One of the easiest ways, just put a lot of records. Let the records stay and get feedback whether your database is ready for the next data.
Yeah, you know, and I definitely think, you know, it's not one or the other. I definitely think that in a mature test suite, you know, you need all of the above. You know, particularly, you know, unit testing, component testing, you're going to want to, here's clean slate, I need to verify that it works, right? On the integration tests, though, you really do need to start breaking it into, you know, like you said, the production-oriented testing. I need a much more realistic deployment. And that realistic deployment is not just, you know, realistic components, like the not mocked components, but don't mock your data either, right? You know, make sure that it's real data that exists in the wild. Another example from that same system was, you know, the fact that we had international users that, you know, had, you know, whose local systems were using multiple character sets. Right. So that, you know, so the input was going in a couple of cases. I mean, it wasn't a lot, but we had different character encodings going into the database. And all the tests were assuming UTF-8, UTF-16, right? You know, very, you know, a very limited set. They weren't actually going off and looking at the actual data and had all kinds of rendering issues when, you know, when the content was actually, you know, put up on the screen. So, you know, it's hard. Yes, but, you know, again, don't mock your data.
Yeah. One of the libraries I wish I could write one day, like I have 100, so number 70 in the list is something that, and I know that there are companies that are already doing it, something that takes your product, records your production input, right? Records what's getting into your HTTP in production, store it somewhere in the cloud, and then your test import this data, thousands or much more records, and play them against the testing API. So you get the much more realistic data, the best data, the production data. The tooling for this is not there yet, but it's, I don't know. I wish it was.
One of the things that you can do, this is approach that I have done, and it's also supported in AutoCannon, which is my unit test tool, is that you can use one of those popular. There are tools that record in .har format, and then you can Fastify support that as an input. So not Fastify, AutoCannon supports that as an input. So you can actually record the user experience, take that, and put it inside AutoCannon to do load testing, for example. I know it's the same, but there is some of that logic over there, so you might get some inspiration if you're willing to dig deep, Yoni.
Yeah, it's the same concept. If you run performance testing with the same set of data, one type of input, you're highly decreasing your chances of finding something. But if you're replaying a lot of realistic data, and the performance tests are much more trustable.
On the performance side, is the integration testing only about functional correctness, or is it also about finding performance issues? Like what is the scope of these integration tests in terms of what are you looking for? What are you validating?
Yeah, that's a great point. Ideally, I think that you want to cover everything. Every risk, you have a risk, you cover it. And I already shared a few examples. One of them is documentation. Very easily you can test your Swagger. There used to be a tool for Node.js that find memory leaks in testing. Sadly, it is not maintained enough, but this is the vision I see. Now that you are running with your almost real infrastructure, you can catch everything. It's only the tooling is not yet there. So yeah, one of my kind of dream is that you could have a tool that identify that you suddenly have a performance drawback, a 20% decrease in performance in your API responses. It probably means something, and it's consistent. So yeah, you could theoretically also discover a performance issue, but I don't think that the tool is there yet. So if Matteo is up to take to jump on this opportunity, it could be awesome.
Yeah, I am. I'm very overcommitted in term of my open source work. So let's not. I'm not committing to anything right now. I am. I've been very behind all my duties in as a maintainer because I have a flurry of yearly release to ship. So there was Node 16, and I'm currently working on Pino. So I have a Node 16, there is 11 V4, then we have Pino V7, Fastify V4. All of these needs to more or less ship in some level of order. So, hey, happy days.
Yeah, I was going to say, Camp Frank got Matteo's most important recent release, and that is his new baby, Zoe, who's
only a few months old. Yay, Zoe!
So,
he's 5 months old.
So, lots of time being taken up there. But I mean, yeah, there's lots of opportunity here for things to improve. Lots of room for innovation in the testing space, particularly in the integration and testing side. I think there's some fantastic libraries out there for unit tests, fantastic things out there, for getting into the component tests. But you know, as we said at the start, very little on integration testing, and I think it's an area that it can really see a lot of growth. We are coming up to the end of our time. I think we actually went over a little bit, so we need to. It's been a fantastic conversation. I've been kind of getting lost in it, and our producers jumping into the into our background chat here saying hey. We're going long. It's been a fantastic conversation. One thing that I want to make sure we get into the show notes, any links to more, to more information where people can learn more about this. We definitely want to put a link to your repo that you've done. But if there's anything else that you can share, Yanni, in terms of links to where people can go to start digging in on this, it'd be great and helpful.
Sure. So first, we are releasing the repo. These days, it has 40 best practices and a fully working example app. It is called Node.js Integration Best Practices. You should be able to Google it and find it. And if not, we are. I'll include the link nearby the show URL. And I also like to say many thanks to the people who are doing this open source work, who work with me and spend days and night on benchmarking and ensuring that their advice indeed. Is reputable. So Michael Shlomo and Daniel Gluskin, thanks for all this contribution. Last thing from me, I'm also releasing these days a Node.js testing course. If it sounds interesting, then visit testjavascript.com. And really, it was a pleasure being with you today.
Fantastic. Yeah, thank you, Yanni. It was a fantastic conversation. All right, so thanks everyone for listening. As always, you can find us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or you can find another way to listen to us if you go to anchor.fm/openhivejs. And we thank you for joining us.